Welcome to All Learning Reimagined, the podcast that defines convention and redefines the purpose and practice of education. Here we venture beyond institutional boundaries to explore visionary ideas, transformative narratives, and pioneering voices shaping a future rooted in self-directed, heart-led learning. Whether you're a parent, educator, or curious mind devoted to lifelong growth, this is your space to challenge assumptions and co-create a more humane and intuitive approach to education. We believe that learning is a natural act. Together, we'll uncover stories, cultivate wisdom, and engage with practices that empower learning as an organic, soulful journey. Let's reimagine what education can be.
Hey, g'day, and welcome to All Learning Reimagined. And I'm your host, Teresa, bringing you a little ray of sunshine. As together we're reimagining the future of education, one inspired story at a time. It's lovely to be here again. I cannot believe we've got a couple of shows under our belt now and seem to be on a roll, which is fantastic. Today, I don't have a guest for you today. It's just me again, rabbiting on. But the topic that I want to talk about today is something that has come up quite a lot recently in conversations that I've been having, and that's around judgment and assessments in schooling settings, whether it even be homeschooling, public school, government schools, all different alternative education. I shouldn't say alternative because they're everywhere. But what are we doing to help track learning for children as adults, and what structures do we actually have? So it does feed into feedback, but there's so many amazing tools that are out there and ways of tracking learning and growth and progress that's just fantastic. And I wanted to share and raise awareness today for those people who might be stuck in a system that basically just judges with an A to E report card. I know there's many different countries that do lots of different things, so I'm just going to touch on today what I possibly can in this small amount of time of our judgment-based systems and assessment, and then possible alternatives that you could trial if you feel. So take what resonates today. If you're in the amazing situation where you're already doing incredible stuff, reach out and share your stories. I think that's what this is all about. It's literally just sharing heart to heart so that we can get the message out there and really have people stop and go, why do I do what I do? And is it still serving me? And then, of course, celebrating the amazing things that are happening. So I am going to start with a story. Of course, this is how I do it. I'm going to start with a story, and then I'm going to share where our A to E grading system came from, and then some different styles of assessment that are currently being used in many different places around the world. So my story is about a young boy called Toby. And Toby, what could I say about Toby? He's a boy who saw the world through very different eyes, and he was really an outdoor boy. He loved to be in the bush, in the wild. From a young age, his family instilled a really deep respect for land and its creatures, and he was a really gifted tracker. He loved bush tucker and looking at knowing what foods you can eat, tracking or looking at the weather, tracking the animals, and his family went camping often. And he really had this love of nature and this connection with nature. And Toby is about 12 years old, and he was at school, and his teacher told him that he had to do a research assignment about animals. And Toby wasn't really necessarily engaged in school that much, but when he heard that he could do an assignment about animals, he was like, oh my gosh, this is me, I can do this. And he could see the patterns of the animals' movements and their behaviors and their connections to the land. And he thought, oh my God, this is my chance to share what I know and what I love so much with the world. So he poured everything that he knew into his work. He spent hours, he wrote about the local wildlife. He actually even hand drew his own illustrated animals and labeled the tracks and the features. He was really excited to share what he learned. And other students in the class, he knows that they were using a lot of AI to get their research and technology, and a lot of them were using adults for help. But Toby just wanted this to come from his own heart, his own hands, and did it his own way, basically. And knowledge just wasn't facts for him. It was living, breathing connection to the earth because he's lived it. Now, the thing about Toby, and I know many people who are out there who are educators or have been educators, we all know a Toby. Some of us might have Tobys in our family. But unfortunately for Toby, when he finally got his research, where his feedback back from this assignment, he actually got a D. He was awarded a D. And that's because all of the work that he poured into it didn't necessarily fit the criteria, the standard criteria that was given as a judgment for the class. So he didn't use headings in the task that were on the task sheet. He went and created his own headings. He didn't have sentence structure that was fully correct. He didn't have references from the experts. So he didn't have a bibliography with references from experts. He actually had used his own knowledge. And that wasn't necessarily acknowledged. He had a lot of corrections around, he didn't meet the word count that was expected on the assignment. I can go on, the list can go on. And as you can imagine, Toby was crushed, just crushed, because he poured his heart and his soul into this assignment and he just couldn't understand why the teacher couldn't see how much he had learned gathering all of this and putting it together, and how far he came from when he started, because Toby didn't like to write, he didn't like to spell, and yet here he had created an entire assignment, which he was so proud of. And in the end, Toby just basically said, well, what's the point? You know, I've given you my best, and my best isn't given good enough. And it doesn't matter. The marks are what matters. And so that actually can spark a catalyst for a new belief for him, which is, I am not enough. I am not good enough. Which many of us can observe this everywhere in society. The amount of adults that are out there that feel like they're always chasing something or self-judging because they feel like they are enough, not enough. And sometimes it's because you're being judged from something outside of yourself that can give us this label. And that feeling actually stayed with Toby. True story, this one, with Toby. This stayed with him for years, a long, long time. And he didn't become a school refusal, but he really did not try. He just didn't see the point. He went through the motions, complied where he had to, and just couldn't wait to leave that learning settings so that he could get out into the real world, because the world of grades and judgment had told him that he was lacking, and then Toby unfortunately started believing it. And this is not an isolated story, and it really does reflect on the larger issue of our educational systems, because the system that values measurement of outcomes over the intangible progress that students make. I do wonder if we do need to start questioning this, because where growth is reduced to you're a letter or you're a number, regardless of the effort that you put in or the progress that you made personally in your skill set, why are we doing this? Like, I really have to ask myself the question of why do we do this? Where does the emotional well-being come in? Where does the effort come in? And more importantly, the self-reflection so the student can take responsibility and accountability for their own learning. And this goes for adults as well. And you know, what point did we decide self-worth was met to a standard or had to fit a mold that didn't honor uniqueness and creativity, which, let's face it, in society today, employers are screaming out for people who've got that connection and that creativity and can think outside the box. As far as Toby was concerned, there was no box, just no box. So what can be done about this? Well, I think the first thing, if you're asking my opinion, is to recognize that learning is not a linear path. It's not about fitting into predetermined boxes. It's about nurturing the student's or the child's unique gifts. And they are all born with a innate sense of learning. We don't have to label anything. There's the emotional, the spiritual, the intellectual growth that a child will have is more important than a grade on a paper. So self-reflection and effort and perseverance really could be honored, and that is that work ethic that helps you shape what type of adult you are. Are you a person that dresses, even if you're feeling down, you get dressed and you show up anyway? Or are you a person that just constantly strives for perfection? You need that next A and that next A plus because you have to try, try, try. I know I've taught many children over the years who are A plus students, and they really almost get to the point of burnout, and yet in their personal life, there's a lot of life skills they didn't necessarily have, or they were not necessarily happy. And yet it all seemed to be about chasing that grade. But who are you without that judgment from somebody else? I just wanted to bring all of this up today. I just want to shake the jar, basically, and then see what settles for you, and give you some lots of alternatives, because there's some incredible stuff going on and have been going on for a long time, decades, of course, even longer than that. But it's considering how can we shift our societal focus, because defining success really needs to start everywhere. It can't just be with the child or the education system. It also needs to be with society and even your own families, because the pressure from different families can come from many different places. Compassionate, curious, and self-aware human beings is really what we are aiming for. And we need to reflect on what truly matters in education. So I'm going to shift to where did the A to E grading system actually originate? So I was curious about this one, and I did a fair bit of research, and the best that I can tell, and I don't even know if this is fully accurate, but the best that I can tell is that in 1897, the Mount Holyoke College was one of the first to adopt the letter grade system. So they had an A to E, A being excellent, and you had to have 95 to 100%. A B being good was 85 to 94%. A C being average was 76 to 84%. A D to pass was 75% back then, was a D to pass. Anything under 75% was an E, which mean you had failed the task. So that was back in 1897. And that's really interesting, because we are in many different places still using percentages and still using letters and numbers to grade. From there, there were a lot of other things that came up in my research, but it really jumped back to the Yale University in 1785. It was often credited with one of the earliest formal attempts to rank students, and they used a numerical scale. Later on, though, the E was changed to an F in many schools, particularly in America, in the United States, and the F was for fa meant fail, obviously. So that's pretty much where I could find the best information for where this originated. It might not be true. It could have happened earlier, but from the best of what I could see, this is where it came from. And then when we ask why did this system spread so much? It's because of the times. It was aligning with the industrial values of the day. Efficiency and standardization and ranking was really important, because the people who thought they were in charge, I don't like to say powers that be, let's say powers that were, They really wanted good employees. They wanted factory workers. They didn't want people to be creative. They just wanted them to be compliant and do as they told, and they wanted to be able to rank them. And so the public education system really expanded back then, and the administrators needed scalable tools to compare students very quickly, which is why the grading system took off. And it became a tool to sort, to gatekeep, and even to credential. And it's not really a true reflection on human potential. However, unfortunately, in many places and countries around the world, this is still the main grading system for today. And my question is, why is that? If it's not actually about deep learning and it's about judging and putting you in a box, basically, and labeling you, what's the point? And is this truly the future of where we're headed? Particularly with the rise of AI, the amount of educators I've been talking to over the last couple of years that say, what's the point? The children simply Google the answer. And Google's not, I know people use Google as a verb these days. It's actually quite disturbing, really. But meaning that they're using AI. If you can just type in a computer and write what the assignment is, and it can spit out within seconds the whole assignment, then why are you spending a whole semester learning these skills when the AI can get you that grade? And there are a lot of people saying, well, what's the point? But more importantly, there's a lot of children, teenagers, students that are all saying, what is the point? Why are we doing this? And that whole disengagement of feeling like, you know, that sense of, oh, I did it, I can do it. I've achieved something, I've progressed, which is really, in my opinion, with humanity, something that we strive for. We want growth, we want to learn. It's almost like we're wired to do that. That's a whole nother conversation. But are the grades cutting it? My personal opinion is no, it's not. And it is time for us to turn around and say, well, okay, what are the alternatives? And there's a fantastic schools out there, learning environments out there, homeschoolers out there that have taken the ball and run with this, and they've done it for a very long time. And moving away from that industrial era schooling designed sorting and conformity system, the whole external in judgment. And really, trying to flip it so that it's an internal growth and capability, and the children themselves, or the adults, or the teenagers, let's not even put an age on this, can take control of that sense of growth and sense of self-worth and what they value themselves. So it's not something that reinforces failure and competition and fixed mindset. We want something that can reflect creativity and empathy and collaboration and problem solving. Something's just popped in my mind. Remember trying, I don't know if any of you were involved in this, but you've got brownies and scouts and any of those sorts of outdoor clubs where children had to earn a badge. They had to prove that they had a skill set, and then they could earn themselves a badge. Well, there's lots of different scenarios that still use that today. But the sense of pride when you actually got it was like, wow, that's amazing. So that would be something that I imagine Toby would really go for, to be able to prove that he's got different skill sets if he could put a patch on his backpack, basically. Anyway, I digress. I've been talking for too long and I haven't even gotten on to the main things yet. So we have lots of different schools. You know, forest schools and Montessori schools, and you know, to name two, there's just so many that use lots of different programs, and particularly peer teaching. I know that the Chitinian schools in Russia, they don't even have a formal grading system. They use a lot of peer teaching. When the children know how to teach someone else, then that's a true sign of deep learning. Peer tutoring and if you can't teach it to somebody else or explain it very simply, then you don't know it. And that's a really good guide and something that I've used a lot in my own career at the same time when working with learners. That whole mastery based, where the learners progress once they've fully integrated the skill or the concept. And these schools, they use group feedback, self-reflection, and they replace the teacher-issued marks. The children do it themselves. However, their curriculum is really integrated. They have music and math and science and art. Everything's all woven together. And so it's actually assessed through creation and contribution, how you contribute, which is beautiful. Because the task might be, let's go and build a chook shed. You need to design it, you need to physically build it and create it. And if it doesn't work, then the shed's going to fall down and there'll be nowhere for the chickens to go. So that's a really good guide of whether you can do it or not with the skill sets. So it doesn't necessarily have to be something that's another person coming out and judging you. The results speak for themselves, particularly on how you can contribute and your creativity and bringing it together. You also have lots of schools. I'm just going to call them forest schools because I know that this is broadcasting to many different countries and there's many different names. But they use a lot of observation-based tools and assessments, and these have been around for a long, long time. Educators document the children's experiences and their decisions and their risk-taking and their collaboration, depending on the age group and their literacy skills, whether they can do it themselves or co-collaborate with lots of conferencing with the adult and the mentor, or whether the children are tracking it themselves. With learning journals and portfolios and storytelling. The progress is tracked through connection to nature in forest schools and confidence and exploration and their resilience and cooperation. And they also often, but not always, use a tool called the Loewen scale, which is an emotional well-being and involvement. And this originally came from Belgium. It's an observation tool. And it can be used a lot in the early childhood education setting. Goodness gracious me, that was a mouthful. And it's used to track how deeply children are engaging with their learning. So student engagement, there's a huge shift towards student engagement, particularly since COVID, and how secure they feel in their environment. So in the Loewen school scale, there are two different scales. There's the emotional well-being scale, and then there's the involvement scale, which is really about student engagement, which also reminds me of John Hattie, has also got engagement scales. It also links to something called a capacity matrix, where you basically have it's not real necessarily a ranking, but you can say, are you what skill is it? It not yet. You're emerging or you're beginning, you're developing that skill, your skill, you're proficient, or you have mastery of that skill. There's many different scales that you can use in these settings. So capacity matrices are also a fantastic tool that can be used. I know we've talked about learning portfolios and project-based exhibitions, which have different types of criteria. So clarity and creativity and effort and contribution can be part of whatever the skill set is. Peer feedback and group reflection is really fantastic as well. And narrative reports. There's so many. And so, as usual, every week for every single podcast, I write an article. And this week's article, which I just loaded up a few moments ago, goes for 8 pages. All of the research that I've put together and all of the different tools that I have been able to find on ways of tracking progress in homeschool settings or any school setting for that matter, I've put it all at the end of the article, including examples of the Loewen scale and examples of capacity matrices, and then the story of Toby. Putting it together. For anyone that's interested in investigating this further, if you're sitting there thinking, how do I define success in learning? You know, what can I possibly use if I'm not going to use grades? Now, I can already hear some people saying, yes, but in the learning place that I'm working at, we're expected to you to write a report card. We're expected to use A to E. Okay, well, if you have to do that for compliance, then do that, but is that the only thing you need to do? Do you have freedom and autonomy within your classroom to use progress charts or capacity matrices or something where the children can track their own learning working towards whatever grade that happens to be so that they can see their own progress? Is there some way that they can self-recognize or learn to teach someone else the skill that they've learned so we can deepen their learning so it's not surface learning just to get a grade? There has to be a blend, and at some stage, we need to shift towards what we choose and what we prefer rather than what we are told to do, because that's the way that it's always been done in our lifetime. And they're the questions that I really wanted to bring up today. And I do ask that if you do have a go and trial and step out of your comfort zone and try some of these things, will you see a change with the students when they take ownership and track their own growth? Personally, I have seen it myself. I've seen children who can really flip the narrative of their own self-worth and the way they see themselves when they can see that they have moved that little bit further and what's the next step and what's the next step, and they can work at their own pace, and reflect on that growth, so that even though little boys like Toby, who did make a huge he did make a huge impact. He did progress in his own personal skill sets based on where he started when it came to putting that assignment together, but it was not recognized outside. So how can we do that? Oh my gosh, I've just blah, 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 spoken to you so quickly, and I've got lots of information that I've put out there. So if you are interested in reading or finding and getting ideas from all of those tools that I've pretty much just dumped, done a brain dump, heart dump, and spat it out. Gosh, my head is stuttering today. Then you can find out on the webpage, which is bbsradio.com/all learning reimagined. That's where you can find all of the podcasts, and you can find all of the articles and resources that I publish, and for you to basically take it, see what resonates, and share it around as much as you possibly can. And all I can imagine is that when we're reimagining our learning, there are always other possibilities and other ways to express and explore and experience than what we're currently doing. So, and that's basically what this show is all about. I'm going to wrap it up now and say thank you for listening again. Next week, we're going to have a fantastic guest speaker, and she is a 16-year-old girl who is forging her own path, and she's very, very inspiring. So make sure you tune in next week so you can hear her fantastic story. So thank you for joining me on All Learning Reimagined. Explore, experience, express. Go out, everybody, and live learning. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on All Learning Reimagined, where passion illuminates the path forward. Remember this: the future of learning doesn't arrive from above, it begins within. You are the spark, the shift, the living answer to education's silent call for transformation. So stay curious, stay awake. Let inspiration be your compass, because how we learn today is not just personal, it is profoundly generative. It shapes the very architecture of tomorrow's world. We are not separate from the system, we are its evolution. Until next time, trust the wisdom of your own unfolding and let your life be the lessons that light the way for others.